The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and the Harvard Heart Letter. The first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter of November 2022, and it's entitled Steak and Burger Substitutes to Satisfy a Carnivore. Plant-based meats offer ways to reduce animal fat in your diet, but eat them in moderation. Diets high in red meat are associated with many health problems like chronic inflammation, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, dementia, and premature death. While those risks may be enough to keep you from digging into a juicy burger or steak, they may not stop your craving for meaty textures on the plate. Plant-based burgers or steaks, now being featured in grocery stores, vegan food shops, and restaurants, might fill the bill if you keep some caveats in mind. Plant-based meat alternatives, which are abbreviated PBMAs, have been around for decades. They're made of flours, concentrates, or isolates, proteins drawn from plants that come from foods like soybeans, black beans, mushrooms, or whole grains. PBMAs like black bean burgers or tofu steaks don't always look or taste like red meat, but they may provide enough flavor and texture to satisfy the sensory experience you want in a meal. They may also have a few health perks. They typically contain less total unsaturated fat and cholesterol than red meat, and they may be rich in protein and fiber. But there is a new generation of PBMAs, like those seen in Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods, which is engineered to replicate the taste and texture of red meat. The products, made from purified soy or pea protein, are thick and savory. They smell, taste, and look like meat, with pink centers that ooze juice when cooked. But they're usually lower in total and saturated fat and cholesterol than the real thing. Also, they contain about the same amount of protein as red meat and are fortified with vitamins like B12, which is often missing in plants. All PBMAs can help you to reduce red meat in your diet, but be aware of the following caveats. PBMAs are processed food. They may be minimally processed, like tofu steaks, or ultra-processed, like the new PBMAs. By this, they mean the PBMAs from Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. Ultra-processed foods contain ingredients that were changed dramatically from their original plant form. They can also include lots of salt, oil, sugar, flavoring, and preservatives, all of which in high amounts increase risk for chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, obesity, and cancer, as well as chronic inflammation and premature death. Some of the newer PBMAs are higher in saturated fat than traditional PBMAs and not that different from red meat. Some of the PBMAs from Impossible Foods contain heme iron. Heme is an iron-containing molecule found naturally in animal foods, especially red meat. The heme in Impossible Foods is genetically engineered from soy roots. Iron is important for body function, but our research has shown that too much heme iron in the diet is associated with an increased risk for diabetes, especially in older adults. Says Dr. Frank Hu, the Frederick J. Sterra Professor and Chair of the Department of Nutrition and Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Despite the potential risks of PBMAs, they may have a role in your diet. I think it's okay to include PBMAs as a replacement for red meat. How often you eat them is still a question. A couple of times per week might be fine, Dr. Hu says. Why don't we have definitive answers as to whether diets emphasizing PBMAs are healthier than diets rich in red meat? While many studies have shown that there are health benefits to replacing red meat with minimally processed plant foods, very few studies so far have compared eating red meat with eating PBMAs. Some recent evidence has been encouraging. At this point, we don't know how PBMAs will influence health long term. Until we have more answers, eat the PBMAs only in moderation, and go for the ones with the fewest ingredients and the lowest levels of salt and saturated fat. Don't pair them with unhealthy foods like French fries, soda, and refined grains like white bread that's found in buns. And if PBMAs with heme are on the menu, it's called soy leg hemoglobin. Reduce other sources of heme, especially meat, in your diet. As for other substitutes for red meat, actual plants, vegetables, and legumes are great options. Both are low in calories, they have little or no fat, and they're rich in vitamins, as well as fiber and antioxidants that fight free radicals. Legumes like beans and lentils are also excellent sources of protein. They also cost a lot less than red meat or PBMAs. For example, try a large portobello mushroom cap, thick 3-inch slices of eggplant, cut crosswise from side to side, or a homemade bean burger made of beans like chickpeas or black beans. For steak alternatives, you can use thick slices of eggplant cut lengthwise from root to stem, or slices of a large head of cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, or Romanesco. It's okay to roast or grill plant steaks and burgers and even get grill marks on them. Just be careful not to burn them. You want to maintain their nutrition content, Dr. Hu says. To flavor them, brush them with a marinade made of your favorite spices and a healthy oil before grilling or roasting them. Avoid topping them with salty, sugary, or creamy sauces, but do go for healthy versions of the toppings you like on burgers, like tomato, onion, and mustard, or sautéed mushrooms on a cauliflower steak. For generally healthy people, red meat doesn't have to be off the menu entirely. It's especially important to minimize processed red meat like bacon, hot dogs, and sausages, particularly if you have or if you're at high risk for diabetes, heart disease, cancer, or cognitive decline. With the many steak and burger alternatives available, you'll find other meals to enjoy. Now I'm going to have one more article here from the Harvard Health Letter of November 2022, and that's entitled Programs to Sharpen Your Driving Skills. We have more reason than ever to be cautious on the road. The latest numbers from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration shows that traffic deaths have been steadily increasing in the United States among people age 65 and older. While the numbers dipped slightly during the pandemic lockdown in 2020, they more than made up for it in 2021, jumping 14%. Whether you'll be on the road for a trip to the grocery store, a holiday gathering, or a warmer climate for the winter, you need to make sure you're driving as safely as possible. The first title is Car Fit Evaluations. Once we reach a certain age, it can be difficult to reach the gas and brake pedals or see above the dashboard. This could be because you've gotten a little smaller with age, or you're unfamiliar with the vehicle's high-tech tools that can tailor your fit. A program called CarFit can help. It's a checkup from the AAA, AARP, and the American Occupational Therapy Association designed simply to help you fit better in your vehicle. You can attend an in-person CarFit event or watch a workshop online. During a CarFit checkup, an occupational therapist will guide you through a list of 12 areas in your vehicle that require proper fit, show you how to use equipment to make changes, and make recommendations for adaptive equipment if you need it. For example, there are buttons that can move the gas pedal or steering wheel. You can find out more about CarFit at www.car-fit.org. A driving refresher course helps you to stay up to date on the latest driving techniques. It can also provide you with workarounds for challenges like fighting glare at night or navigating around aggressive drivers. You can take a driving refresher course online, in a classroom, or with a local driving instructor. There's more information about this at www.health.harvard.edu/ARD. These driving refresher courses cost less than $30 for online classes and $100 if you're taking them from a local driving instructor. If you take these courses, it may save you money on your car insurance. Call your insurance company to find out for sure. If you've noticed changes in your driving ability, consider getting a formal driving assessment. You can be referred to a hospital-affiliated program that includes both a clinical evaluation and a road test. In the clinical evaluation, health professionals ask about medical conditions, medications you're taking, and more. We assess all the things that affect your driving skills, your vision, your cognition, range of motion, strength, coordination, sensation in your arms and legs, hearing, and medication side effects, says Amy Donabedian, an occupational therapist and certified driving rehabilitation specialist at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. For the driving evaluation, you'll get in a car and demonstrate your ability on the road. A health professional and a certified driving instructor will go along for the ride. We look at your control of the gas pedal, the brake, and the steering wheel, and we have a lot of questions we need to answer. Can you stay in your lane? Are you following the rules of the road? Are you aware of pedestrians, stop signs, and other cars? What's your reaction time? Can you park the car and back out of a space safely? After the assessment, the team recommends steps to improve driving ability. For example, they may suggest that you take a driving refresher course or practice certain habits like driving only during the day, at times when roads aren't congested, and driving with a spouse or friend who can be an extra set of eyes. Or they may recommend driver rehabilitation, occupational therapy for grip strength, or modifications that make you more comfortable in the car, like a seat cushion to improve your fit in the seat. The goal is to keep you on the road. These formal driving assessments cost about $600 and are not covered by Medicare. Some hospitals offer programs that not only assess your driving ability, but also provide additional training to keep you behind the wheel. A certified driving rehabilitation specialist will help you to learn to use adaptive equipment if you need it, practice driving in challenging conditions, and develop safe driving habits. These programs are helpful for people who have a condition like a neuropathy or Parkinson's disease affecting their ability to drive, and those who've had a stroke or another injury that affects driving. And we're also going to briefly review a news brief from the Harvard Health Letter of November 2022. And it's entitled, Doing Any Aerobic Activity Regularly May Help You to Live Longer. Any kind of activity that gets your hearts and lungs working is good for you. But does one type of exercise help you to live longer than another? Not really, according to research published online August 24, 2022 by JAMA Network Open. The observational study involved more than 272,000 adults, average age 70, who answered questions about their health and activity levels in 1995, and again in 2005, and then were followed for another 12 years. Participants reported how much time they spent jogging, running, cycling, swimming laps, or doing other aerobic exercise like taking an aerobics class or using an exercise machine. They also reported how much time they spent playing tennis, squash or racquetball, playing golf or walking. Doing any of those activities for the recommended amount of time each week was associated with a 13% lower risk for premature death, compared with not exercising. Playing racquet sports and running produced the greatest risk reductions, 16% and 15%, probably because they are more demanding, say study authors. But since all the activities were linked to a longer life, the authors say it's most important to simply choose an exercise you enjoy and can sustain over time. The Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans recommends doing 2.5 to 5 hours per week of moderate intensity activity, like brisk walking, or 1.25 to 2.5 hours per week of vigorous intensive activity, like playing tennis. Now we're going to turn to the Harvard Heart Letter. And this is the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2022. And we're going to start with the lead article, which is Debunking Myths About Heart Disease. Here's the history behind four common myths about cardiovascular health and what the current research says. Much of the basic advice about staying healthy has stood the test of time. Don't smoke. Exercise. Eat your vegetables. Certain recommendations about avoiding heart disease have evolved, thanks to the constant stream of new evidence from medical research. Long-held habits and beliefs are often hard to shake. But knowing the latest evidence can help you to make better choices for preventing, monitoring, and recognizing heart disease. Here's a look at four misconceptions related to heart disease, along with take-home advice from Heart Letter Editor-in-Chief, Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt. The first myth is taking a daily fish oil supplement can help to prevent heart disease. In the 1970s, scientists noted that people whose diet featured a lot of fatty fish had low rates of heart disease. Fatty fish are rich in the omega-3 fatty acids EPA and DHA, which have biological effects that may benefit the cardiovascular system, like easing inflammation and preventing blood clots. By the 1980s, omega-3 fish oil supplements started showing up in stores. Today, these amber capsules are among the most popular supplements sold in the United States. But over the past two decades, numerous trials that compared omega-3 supplements against placebos have found no evidence that the capsules can help stave off heart attacks or related problems in healthy people. Don't waste your money on over-the-counter omega-3 supplements, says Dr. Bhatt. Like all supplements, they're not regulated by the FDA, and some contain unhealthy saturated or oxidized fats, industrial pollutants, or even mercury, he adds. Myth 2. It's okay to have a higher blood pressure if you're over 65. As people age, their artery walls stiffen, forcing the heart to pump harder. As a result, blood pressure tends to rise. This phenomenon was originally referred to as essential hypertension because doctors thought that for older people, high blood pressure was essential to deliver enough blood to the brain. That's why some doctors have suggested that after age 65, systolic blood pressure can be as high as 150. Current guidelines, though, advise adults to aim for a systolic reading of 130 or lower. Reaching that goal often requires people to take two or more blood pressure drugs. That could leave older adults prone to side effects like dizziness and falls, but those concerns don't appear to be warranted in most cases. Recent research revealed similar side effect rates among older people who aim for lower 120 to 130 systolic versus higher 130 to 150 systolic blood pressure targets. More importantly, the lower targets led to reduced rates of strokes and heart attacks. Turning to page 7. And other serious cardiovascular problems. Dr. Bhatt's advice, no matter how old you are, work with your doctor to achieve a blood pressure below 130 over 80 and try to avoid side effects. Myth number 3, a family history of heart disease means you're destined to have it too. It's true that having a parent or sibling with heart disease will increase your risk of this common condition, especially if the relative had early heart disease, defined as a heart attack that occurs before age 55 or before age 65 in a woman. Coronary artery disease, which happens when fatty plaque narrows the arteries feeding the heart, is by far the most common form of heart disease. Factors like a high cholesterol and high blood pressure that boost heart disease risk may be linked to genes that run in families. But unhealthy behaviors like smoking or poor diet or exercise habits also tend to run in families and may contribute to the elevated risk. For most people, lifestyle factors carry more weight than genetics, and healthy habits can help counteract inherited risks, says Dr. Bhatt. Keep in mind that if early heart disease runs in your family, you may have an inherited lipid disorder like familial hypercholesterolemia, which is an abnormally high LDL cholesterol, or an elevated lipoprotein. Of course, this is something you should discuss with your doctor. Finally, myth number 4 is only women get unusual heart attack symptoms. Nearly 20 years ago, the American Heart Association launched the Go Red for Women campaign to help raise awareness of heart disease in women. The key message was that recognizing heart attack symptoms highlighted some of the less common ones like nausea, vomiting, dizziness, and jaw pain. Some studies suggested that women are more likely to experience these symptoms than men. But the differences aren't all that great, and less typical symptoms can also occur in men. Be aware of all these symptoms and call 911 if you suspect you're having a heart attack, says Dr. Bhatt. The article goes on to mention that common symptoms of a heart attack include chest pain in 79% of men and 74% of women, sweating in 47% of men and 44% of women, shortness of breath in 40% of men and 48% of women, pain in the left arm and shoulder, which occurs in only 37% of men and 38% of women, and nausea or vomiting, which occurs in 28% of men and 39% of women. Overall, women are somewhat more likely to have nausea and breathlessness than men when it comes to heart attack symptoms. Now here's a brief article, which is entitled, Some Heart Patients Need Antibiotics Before Dental Work. Guidelines suggest that people with certain heart conditions take antibiotics before invasive dental procedures. A new study confirms the benefit of this practice for reducing the risk of endocarditis. Published in September 2022, in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, the study relied on health and dental records from nearly 8 million people, including more than 36,000 at high risk for endocarditis. This includes people with a replaced or repaired heart valve, certain congenital heart defects, or with a history of endocarditis. Only about one-third of people at high risk for endocarditis received antibiotics before invasive dental procedures. The risk for endocarditis was 10 times higher in those who didn't get antibiotics following a tooth extraction and 12.5 times higher after oral surgery compared with those who received antibiotics before the procedure. People who are vulnerable to endocarditis can download a wallet card for the American Heart Association at www.health.harvard.edu/card for additional information. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.